absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Welcome once again, people. I'm glad to be here. If you don't know who I am, I'll tell you. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. And at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning, you know what time it is. It's time for The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is a place to be. If you want to talk to me, got a great show in store for you today. We're going to be talking about fantasy football. It's that time again, people. It is that time again. I hope you got your pens and pencils and writing utensils, or even if you picked this up on the archives. Here we go. We're going to be doing the tight end position in fantasy football this Sunday. And we're going to cover the rest of the positions every Sunday for the next Tuesday. So right now we're going to be doing tight ends. Next week we'll be doing quarterbacks. The following week we'll be doing wide receivers. And then we're going to wind it up with my favorite position, the running backs. So, like I said, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. That number, and along with this program, is sponsored by Fantasy Sportsbook and casino.com, where winners play and players win. Go to that site, and if you want to make some money, go to that site, make a wager, and good luck. You can also catch me. I'm not on it that much, but I'm going to start getting on it a lot more come this season, and that's on the Twitter. My Twitter handle is at MagicMan1954. That's at MagicMan1954. And if you want to shoot me an email, okay, because we have some leagues that may be available. If you want to shoot me an email about the show, whatever, shoot me an email. My email is addressed at J, as in the letter J, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, 342 at Comcast.net. I try to answer every one of your emails. If you have a question on fantasy football, on whatever it may be, on any of the skill positions, on a defense, on a IDP, for those who don't know what IDP is, an individual defensive position, shoot me an email or hit me up on Twitter, and I'll see if I can answer it for you, see if I can give you a solid answer that makes some sense, and we can run with it. But I'm going to make myself available to you people in every possible way that I see fit, so I can get all your questions answered, whether it's on the air right now, whether it's in Twitter, or whether it's from via email. So just hit me up. That's all I can tell you. Just hit me up. All right. This is what we're going to do, people. Okay? First of all, before I get into the fantasy football side of this, okay, I wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame yesterday. Okay? They had several players going into the Hall of Fame. Enos Williams, Walter Jones, Michael Strahan, for the first time ever, a punter in Ray Guy. Oh, my God. I can't believe I can't remember these guys' names. Claude Humphreys and I must say, I was very impressed with the 2014 Hall of Fame class. They distinguished themselves, and I guess the Pro Football Hall of Fame knew that to put Michael Strahan last, because to tell you the truth, you would have thought he was on the air. You thought he was he had an audience. I wouldn't say it's a captive audience, but he had an audience that and he was very comfortable in what he had to say, along with all the other inductees. There was an emotional moment to me because of the person that I really admire. This person, he is one heck of a football player, and he's even a better person. I'm talking about Jim Kelly, because his teammate. From those Buffalo Bill teams of Jim Kelly, Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas, and the like, were in the house. And Jim Kelly, all the things that he's going through, he was able to get there, and quite naturally threw a pass to Andre Reed. And that was special. That was very special. Walter Jones, the big guy from Seattle, heck of a guy, really a big teddy bear, but was a monster on the gridiron. Really a big thing for Walter Jones to come into the Hall of Fame through the Seattle Seahawks. So he had some very good speeches, so a good time, and they, like I said, they rounded it off with Michael Strahan as the closer, so to speak. All right. And last but not least, I can't believe I forgot this name, because this guy was a class act all the way around, with a monster on the field, and his homeboy, whatever, not homeboy, but his one of his favorite players that he played with, Warren Sapp, talking about Derek Brooks. Derek Brooks came into there. He was fantastic. He humble, very humble guy, but had an excellent career. Never missed a game in 14 seasons. That's crazy in the position he played. Crazy in the position he played. Without further ado, let me bring in my esteemed co-host. What's up, my man? How you doing?
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everybody out there. How's it going this morning?
Not too bad, my man.
Good.
It's 7 whatever on the East Coast. The West Coast. How you been feeling today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. You know, we the Hall of Fame festivities over the weekend were exciting, and I'm quite sure we all are looking forward to seeing the guys back on the field today. So I'm doing very well.
Yeah, man. The first game. Now, it's not the official game, but it's the first exhibition game, which, in my opinion, I don't know about how you feel, but in my opinion, really starts off the football season. The Buffalo Bills playing the New York Football Giants, and this is my time of year. I absolutely love football, and I love watching football, and I really love playing fantasy football because of the fact that I like the competition, I like the competition. I don't know how you feel, but I really love fantasy football. Once I got into it a few years back, quite naturally, when you first start, you're a novice at it. You make a lot of mistakes. Right now, when you reflect on when you first started, I reflect on it now, and I couldn't believe some of the stupid things and mistakes I made. And quite naturally, you still make some of those mistakes, overthinking and overanalyzing, and rather than just put your boys in there and just let them play. Your thoughts?
Oh yeah, excuse me. Certainly, yeah. It's definitely a learning curve. You certainly have to. There's a lot of strategies. A lot of different just kind of ins and outs, small things that you're mentioning. Having depth. The importance and of some good flex options. Certainly having a good defense and special teams, understanding the scoring system, those numbers add up. And so, I'm with you 100%, Jerry. The first year or two, it was more or less kind of, learning the ropes. And then after that, especially in the league that I'm in, and the amount of trash talking that goes on and the bragging rights that guys hold and stuff like that. So that is certainly up the speed of your curve if you're not into losing.
And what is fantasy football with people you either know or you don't know if you can't talk a little trash or a lot of trash or over an excess of trash, which I have a tendency to do? it's just, to me, it comes with it. Now, I've been in some leagues, I don't know if you have, I've been in some leagues that it's silent from the time after they draft up until the time the last game is played. No one talks any trash. They just put their lineups in and then play it. I can't. That type of league is not as enjoyable and as a fun of league because the fact I feel you're not getting the total amount out of the league if you can't talk a little trash and have a little fun with the competition that you have. I don't know how you feel about that, but that a league's not complete, to me, if you don't talk a little trash from start to finish.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, Jerry. I have a couple guys like that, and I guess they had to put their foot in their mouth a couple times, kind of got ahead of themselves, or a lot of people just want to take the safe route. I've got this one guy in my league. I'm in my longest running league. I've been in there. We're going into our sixth year. We've had the same group of guys, maybe with the exception of it's been like the same group of eight, and we had to maybe sub out one or two over the years. But this one guy in particular, I'm not going to put him out on blast right now. I'm certainly going to put him on blast once the season starts. But, he was his first year in the league. He did really well. He lost in the championship game. The next year he came back and didn't do so well, and then the following year he came back with a strong team, and he thought he just knew by his regular season record that he was just destined for the championship, and I actually ended up knocking him out in the first round and going on to win the championship. And ever since then, he was trash talking those first couple years, and in the year that I knocked him out, big time trash talking he was doing, and ever since then, we ain't been able to get a peep out of this guy. He keeps it close to the chest. He keeps it close to the chest. And I'm quite sure if he wins the championship, he'll talk. But, it certainly defeats the purpose. I mean, it's all in fun. You get in within wanting to win, you certainly want to be a good sport and, have that element to it. Because at the end of the day, as much as we, pick the players still have to go out and perform. So
right. That's right. Yeah, I happen to be in a family league, so it's a bunch of my brothers and my nephews that are in the league, including I have one sister. She's in the league, too. So now we just grouped a couple of my sons that joined up to the league. Now it's a 14-team league. And I must say I'm the one that is the mouth. I'm the one that talks a lot of junk. I happen to win the championship last year, so they're going to get a bunch of me this year. That's no doubt. It's a family league. We're highly competitive between each other. I talk a lot of trash, whether I win or lose. It's just my nature. I just like doing it. It's a fun, in my opinion, it's a fun thing to do. I mean, even if you lose, I can laugh at myself, put my foot in my mouth. That's not going to be the first or last time. So, but I enjoy it. And without further ado, let's get to what we talked about last week and what we're going to be doing this week. We're going to be talking about some tight ends. Some tight ends. Now, way I want to roll with this is this. I want to talk about the number one rated, and then we're going to go down from there for whatever amount it takes. And the number one tight end, in my opinion, and everybody, probably everybody else's, is the man who thought he was going to get paid as the wide receiver, tried to get paid like he was a wide receiver, played like he was a wide receiver, scored mad touchdowns like he was a wide receiver, but is listed as a tight end, and that's Jimmy Graham. He battled foot and elbow injuries toward the end of the season, but never missed a game. He set a career high in touchdowns, and he bounced back after a injury riddled and a drop filled 2012 season. He outscored the number two fantasy at tight end Vernon Davis by 56 points in standard leagues, and like I said, he got paid now. He's basically Drew Brees' number one target. And this year, even though he's listed as number one in my book, I think there's going to be some changes. Not that he's going to not be involved heavily in the offense, but I'm seeing this. This is what I'm seeing about Jimmy Graham and the New Orleans offense. Got a lot of mouths to feed, a lot of mouths to feed. Brandon Cooks isn't – I know he's a rookie, but they really like this guy. Kenny Stills, a second-round – a second-year wide receiver who most rookies, second year – they take a step, and I think he's going to take a big step this year, especially in this offense. Marcus Colston, I know he's long in the tooth, but he was battling some injuries and came on late last year to be a little bit more productive than he was when last season. If you're looking for Jimmy Graham to do what he did last season, it's not going to happen. Now, he's going to be a good – extremely good tight end, but don't expect the same things that you got from Jimmy Graham last year this year. I think he's going to have some serious competition for that top spot this year, but from his body of work right now, he's listed at the number one tight end, in my opinion. Talk to me, man.
Nope, same on this end. There's no way that you can put anybody ahead of him. Obviously, Rob Gronkowski, you know, was the guy that kind of broke onto the scene right about the same time 3 years ago. And so, obviously, if healthy, I think that Rob Gronkowski would probably deservedly so be in that role. But, no, the numbers don't lie. Obviously, we know with Gronkowski, the main thing, health has been an issue, so that's on my end as far as my ratings are concerned, is why I certainly have Graham ahead of him. And also, Jerry, you know, for me, and this was part of that fantasy football learning curve, it comes down to touches. You certainly want players on your team who are getting a high number of targets, you know, a high number of balls thrown their way. And when you look at what Jimmy Graham has been able to do over the last 3 years, the numbers speak for themselves. 2011, he had 99 catches, over 1,300 yards, 11 TDs. In an off year, as you mentioned, in 2012, when he battled injuries, he still put up 85 catches, 982 yards, 9 TDs. And then last year, you know, the season that he had, 86 catches, 1,215 yards, 16 TDs, you know, coming up one short of breaking Gronkowski's record of 17. So I think if you look at his last 3 years, the body of work that he's put together, and I mentioned targets, which for, you know, our fantasy football fans out there, you may use different lingo or may not understand or know what we're talking about, but for a wide receiver, the amount of targets is basically the amount of balls that get thrown in your direction, whether you catch them or not, you know, the amount of balls that the quarterback is intending to complete to you. Graham has had 149 targets, 135 targets, 144 targets, respectively, in his last 3 years. So I certainly don't think you can go wrong there. Drew Brees is a quarterback who's posted a couple 5,000-yard seasons back-to-back. You know that New Orleans is going to air it out, and so he's going to continue to stack up the numbers. I certainly think from a standpoint of catching the ball, the 86 catches, the yards, 1215, I certainly think that's attainable. I think the 16 touchdowns is the area that I would most likely expect to hit to take place. And so, excuse me, he's still rated number one with that offense. You know, like you mentioned, he's with hands down Drew Brees' favorite target. And look, the biggest thing with Graham is the red zone. That's certainly where he excels. He's able to step outside. I mean, he's just an excellent talent. I mean, 6'7", 265 pounds. So like you, Jerry, and I think everybody out there in fantasy football land, you certainly cannot go wrong. And I think it would be unfair to Jimmy due to his production the last 3 years. You know, that's consistency. He's certainly the number one guy I have coming in.
All right, this next guy, and probably some people have him lower than Gronk, but I think this guy, he's only 25 years old. He had 88 targets last year. He was ninth in targets for tight ends last year. He was a monster in the red zone, and I think he's going to move up the totem pole and being the number three option versus Eric Decker, who left for the Jets. Mm-hmm. So behind Demaryius Thomas and Wes Welker, I think Julius Thomas, from what I understand, from what I read after the past season, that he didn't have a total grasp of the playbook. As the season got wore on, he got a lot better. Now he's had a heck of a season last year, and I think the ceiling is going to get even better. And I'm gonna make this bold statement: I think he's going to make put a big challenge, barring health, to Jimmy Graham as the number one option. Now, if you notice, people, you notice the top two tight ends have what is needed, in my opinion, and that is a top five, top three quarterback. So you had Drew Brees thrown to Jimmy Graham and using him quite a bit, and you got Peyton Manning thrown to Julius Thomas in the middle of the field or wherever he lines up and gets to for Peyton Manning. Big target, 25 years old, young stud. His upside is through the roof, in my opinion. I wouldn't be hating on you if you grabbed him late in the second round. Me, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't do that because I draft a different way. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't hate you because the fact is this guy's going to be a PPR and a touchdown machine because he looks for him a lot close mm-hmm. to the, in the red zone. Your thoughts, my man?
Yep, I'm with you 100% there. I certainly would not have any issue with Julius Thomas, the tight end for the Denver Broncos, being rated second in my rankings and in my opinion. I certainly wouldn't mind putting him there at all. I still give Gronkowski the edge there. I have Gronk ranked number two. I mm-hmm. still think that when fully healthy, I still think that the way that Tom Brady looks for Gronkowski, I still have Gronkowski is probably the biggest red zone threat that there is. And, you know, we obviously know when Gronkowski is healthy, the damage he can do. I mean, just in the couple games he played last year, the amount of targets he received, the numbers he put up was ridiculous. But, no, we're talking about Julius Thomas. I certainly don't have any problem for anyone who has him ranked second behind Graham, anyone who were to pick him off the board after Graham is gone. You made some great points there, Jerry. That was his first full season. He came in 2011, basically only had one catch his first year. The year after that, he battled injuries and missed the entire season. So you're talking about a guy in his first year. And as you mentioned, obviously your first year with Peyton Manning itself mm-hmm. is a learning curve in itself. And then just learning how to play, you know, play the position. And so certainly I expect for him to have another big year. As you mentioned, people who get players who get touches, a high number of touches and targets in the red zone are certainly players that you want on your team. And like Jimmy Graham, we've seen Peyton Manning use Julius Thomas a number of times last year in the slot as well as lining out wide. You see this big Thomas – another big guy, 6'5", 250. You know, you see him out wide, one-on-one on a, you know, a helpless 5'8", 5'9 corner. And
right.
It's a done deal. It's a done deal, especially with we're mentioning Breeze and Peyton Manning's accuracy. And so, yeah, I'm big on Julius Thomas this year. I certainly, again, the 12 TDs with Peyton Manning, that is certainly doable again. He can certainly put up better numbers than nothing across the board. You know, certainly nobody's going to complain with 65 catches, 788 yards. I think the thing that I like about Thomas the most out of Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham is that he has the ability to take it the long distance.
Yep.
Graham and Gronk are certainly guys who can run, you know, down the field and catch the ball. But if you recall last year against San Diego, Thomas took about a 7-yard out and took it up the sideline, 74 yards. Nobody can catch him. So he certainly has some breakaway speed and acceleration to his game that I certainly like. And, yeah, like you, Jerry, I mean, he's certainly a guy who, if he's not second off the board due to Gronkowski, he certainly should be the third tight end taken off. And I'm going to pose a question to you, Jerry. You know, I want to notice. I heard about this come from you. You mentioned draft style. And I think that your draft style, as well as watching how, you know, a lot of times other owners, you know, how the board is flowing kind of
mm-hmm.
dictates, you know, some things you do as well. But do you see Thomas, like a couple years ago, even as good as Gronkowski was doing and Graham, they were going, you know, third round, fourth round. Last year you seen guys going, you know, second round.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, Jerry, is a Rob Gronkowski, is a Jimmy Graham, is a Julius Thomas worth a first-round pick or second-round pick?
Let me put it this way. Depending on where you are in the first round, if you're within the first – if it's a 12-team league and you have the first six picks, no. I would think if you're in a PPR, and this is important, if you're in points per reception league, mm-hmm. these guys are going to get a lot of touches. And tight end position, there's quite a few players in a tight end position, but there's only a few elite players, just like quarterback, there's only a few elite players that that you can really count on. In my opinion, if it's a 12-team league, 14-team league, something like that, they're in the lower half of the first round, maybe, okay? depending on what's laying at that late round. But I can see him definitely going in the second round. A lot of people pick up their stud running back, depending on where they're at. They pick up a stud running back in the first round. Some people pick up a quarterback. It all depends. Some people pick up Calvin Johnson or something like that. It all depends on what draft style they have. My draft style, I always pick up running back, regardless of where I'm at on the first round. I'm picking up a running back. I'm picking up a solid running back that, because of what I've seen from the people I draft with, regardless of what league, there's always somebody that goes out of the norm, in my opinion, that drafts a wide receiver or drafts a quarterback. And that just pushes down the talent somewhere where I may grab it. So I always grab a running back the first round, regardless. I've never grabbed a tight end. I never do that. I never grabbed a quarterback and never grabbed a wide receiver. I've always grabbed my foundation because I'm a running back type of guy. Grab my running back first. Second round, depending on what's going there, I'm a foundation guy. I like grabbing my running backs. And the way this year's draft is going for most people, I would suggest grabbing a running back first two rounds. And then you can play whether you want to grab a wide receiver or a tight end. But it's got to be a tight end that's going to get some targets. Now, most people, because of their name recognition, Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, and we'll talk about Rob Gronkowski in a minute, are going to grab those guys, and they may grab them in the second round. I can't hate anybody grabbing those top three guys, Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski, or Julius Thomas, because they're going to be an integral part of those offenses. So I can't hate them, and especially in the PPR, It's just like adding a wide receiver, but it's a tight end position. That's how I feel.
Yep. Well, I'm with you 100%. I certainly, and you know, this is something else I had to learn over the years as well, Jerry. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, it's certainly to each his own. You know, everybody has a certain way they like to draft, a certain game plan, a certain strategy. For myself, and this is actually the last couple of years, like I said, I've been playing fantasy football for 7 years now. But really, for me, it started to boil down to getting that ball in the end zone. As well as a guy may play statistically, you know, if somebody comes out has 80 yards worth of production, that's certainly a good day at the office. But you could get a guy who puts up 50 yards, but he gets that ball in the end zone, and he ends up with a better day numbers wise than that. So I really had to start investing my stock in guys who were going to score and guys who were going to put up the numbers. And with that, it started to have me look at how I draft differently, because I said, you know what, I'm not going to worry about where the player may be positioned on a board as much as I'm going to draft players on production. And I certainly think that is how Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski, and then coming into this year, Julius Thomas, I certainly think that is how you are seeing these players end up in the bottom of the first round, as well as in the second round, because when you're talking about Jimmy Graham, like you said, you got a guy, 16 touchdowns, that's averaging out to one a game. Those numbers are better than, you know, I mean, some of the top-tier wide receivers, some of the top running backs in the league weren't able to put up 1,200 yards in their respective, skill position and 16 TDs. Nobody was able to match that. So, that's where my premium is coming in, and I think that is where and you know what, I'm going to tell you another thing. Like you, Jerry, I've been in the league for a long time. I'm quite sure for most of our fantasy football fans out there, that's something else that once you get accustomed, you play a year or two, you certainly like to, if it's only one, you like to have one league where you're in it with the same guys year in and year out, so you can, kind of get that chatter, that trash talking, that bragging rights, add another element to it. But guys in my league, they're greedy. Like you, I'm in a family type league, 8 of the 10 players. you know, our family members every week. I'm facing my uncle, my father, my cousin, you know,
right.
my brother-in-law. So guys are greedy. Nobody wants to see anybody else. You know, with the top players, guys will certainly kind of draft some guys ahead of schedule to kind of shake things up. So, you know, it certainly is a art and skill to this. But to answer the question, in my opinion, again, I certainly wouldn't have a problem if you're grabbing Jimmy Graham or Julius Thomas in the second round, because as you mentioned to me, the tight end position is really the thinnest when you're talking about depth on the board, and you know, you could find yourself in a bad position, you know, when you look at your scores every week, and your tight end is only putting out, you know, 30 and 40 yards. You know, most tight ends in the league, you know, still the high majority. We have 32 NFL teams, and for the high majority of those teams, still most tight ends, you know, 50 yards of work during the day is considered a good day. So you certainly want to get your hands on the guy that can dominate or win that matchup as much as possible.
Right. All right, let's move on to the quite natural. We talked about him already. He plays for another elite quarterback in Tom Brady. He's coming back from an ACL and MCL that he tore in December, which was late in the season. He's had injury issues over the last two seasons, but when he's in there, he's the Gronk and unstoppable and really Tom Brady's main target. Because the fact is that the outside threats are really not there and haven't been there for a little bit. Julia Edelman went off the charts last year quite naturally because Tom Brady had to have a target. Damian Amendola, typical, as he came from St. Louis with a injury tag on him. He did the same thing. I didn't think anything was going to change when he went to New England. So the last resort was, when Gronk wasn't there, was Edelman. Gronk is coming back, supposedly. He's rehabbing well, and he said he should be ready for week one. I don't know about that. ACL and MCL in December, and coming back eight months after that, 8 or 9 months after that, I don't know about him being ready for, I mean, he could possibly, everybody's different. Look at Adrian Peterson. So everybody's different in the healing process. If he comes back, in my opinion, I know he's the number three listed in my list, but he's, in my opinion, a shaky number three, because out of the first three guys, he's the most injury prone of Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, and Rob Gronkowski. In my opinion, he seems like he gets nicked up because his style of play. He has a tendency to get nicked up quite a bit. I have him number three, but I couldn't hate on anybody if they pushed him further down the list because of the fact of the injury factor. So right now, as we speak, him looking like he's going to be able to get to the first game and play. But we'll wait and see when the season starts. I have Rob Gronkowski listed as number three. Talk to me, man.
Yes, certainly. I had him in at number two. So obviously we're both dead on with that. Those are the top three tight ends. You know, rank them at how you may. Those are certainly the top three tight ends this year. And I'm like you. I certainly am going to, if I'm going to draft Gronkowski, and I'm not going to lie to you, I certainly plan on doing that in one of the leagues that I put in, I play in, because like you said, when healthy, there's no question he's one of the elite players in the NFL, and a guy that, like we said, Tom Brady targets a whole lot, especially in that red zone, you know, where that big 6'6", 265-pound frame comes into play. And if you notice that with Gronkowski, with Graham, with Julius Thomas, we're talking about players 6'5", 250 pounds or better. So, this is what the NFL is turning into now. And for that reason I just mentioned, you know, in the red zone, with those quarterbacks' accuracy, having a target that big is simply unfair. and Gronkowski with those big mitts that he has, those huge hands. You know, he's certainly able to continue to be successful. But I certainly, if I draft him this year, I certainly will have a good backup because, like you, a little bit skeptical on the injuries. Look, we're talking about dating back to 2 years ago when he hurt his ankle in the AFC Championship game against the Ravens. Then it was the forearm surgery. Then it was the back surgery. And then last year, like you said, tearing the ACL and MCL. So, you know, with his size at 6'6", you're certainly talking about a guy who's had injuries in four different places on his body. And like you said, I think aside from his style of play, I think when you look at Graham, Thomas, and Gronkowski, he's certainly the least flexible as far as from an athleticism standpoint.
Right.
So
right.
He runs more of a straight up and down manner. And I think that when you look at that, and you look at his size, how intimidating he is. Like he got injured last year, unfortunately, that's what the NFL has turned to. These defensive guys out there are pretty much helpless. You can't go high because you're going to get called for helmet to helmet, or you're going to get called for defenseless receiver. You go low, you know, you're putting yourself in danger, hurting the player. And I just think it's really unfair to these players that, you know, they get penalized and stuff because you're telling me to expect the guys running out there 1,000 miles an hour and got to try to figure out how to bring down this guy, and all of a sudden at the time of impact, he's supposed to slow up and turn his head and body a certain way to try to tackle this guy. So, you know, I don't want to get too far off track, but I was mentioning when he got injured last year, that's certainly with him what you're afraid of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, running down the middle of the field, which is his bread and butter, he certainly eats up that middle of the field and those seam patterns, and those safeties don't really have any chance to get him down besides going low. And so, like you said, obviously, you still want Gronkowski on your team. I mean, last year in seven games that he played, he racked up 592 yards, had 67 targets. So he's basically getting targeted 10 times a game, had four TDs in those games, average 15 yards. That's the other thing I like about Gronkowski. Really, all these tight ends, they average chunks. Gronk is averaging 15, 14 yards catch for his whole career. So certainly a guy who you want on your team, but I am advising you early, make sure you have a reliable backup tight end or you have a plan B, because if he goes down, it shouldn't be a surprise. I believe that the injury history is proven.
Right. All right, let's move on to this number four guy that I have listed here. He scored 15 touchdowns in 18 games, including the playoffs. He finished as the fantasy's number two tight end. And it was the second time in his career that he eclipsed 10 scores. But he felt he wasn't targeted enough, even though he finished 11th at tight end with 82 targets, which was greatly improved. He greatly improved his route running from the year before. And quite naturally, because of the injury to Michael Crabtree, it increased his effectiveness last year until Crabtree came back. Vernon Davis, I got him listed as the number four on the list. He turned 30 in January, he's looking to get paid. He was going to hold out. He decided not to hold out. This is your boy on your team.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to give you the floor so you can talk about Mr. I Want Winners, Vernon Davis.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I certainly have Davis slated in at number four as well. There's no doubt about that. From a production standpoint, definitely very, very effective. Here's another guy who, big-time red zone threat. You know that the 49ers are one of the best teams at running the football. And when they get inside that red zone and go play action, it's pretty much automatic with Vernon Davis. Like you said, last year, put up excellent numbers, 850 yards. Again, look at this guy's average 16 yards a catch last year, Jerry. So, I mean, these tight ends nowadays can eat you up in big chunks, and they can make plays down the field. And Vernon Davis, just like Julius Thomas, and he and Davis is the fastest out of all of these receivers. Certainly has the ability to take it to the house. If you look at what he's done really since 2008, I mean, we're talking about TD catches of 57, 73, 66, 53. Last year, the long was 64 yards. So, I mean, this guy is certainly getting the job done. I certainly think he's going to continue to excel. Him and Colin Kaepernick obviously have a great amount of rapport. I think the biggest question with Davis this year is the 49ers, unlike last year, are completely healthy and actually better at the wide receiver position. And so you just – I'm wondering, is his amount of production – I still think in the red zone he'll be a viable option, but I don't see the 13 TDs. Like I said, last year they were out Crabtree. They were out Manningham. So pretty much Bolden and Davis were the top two options. Now when you're looking at a healthy Michael Crabtree, who in my opinion is Colin Kaepernick's top target, you still have Bolden in the mix. You bring over Stevie Johnson. So there's certainly more balls to go around. And, you know, I think it may be a tad bit difficult. The 52 catches, I'm certain he can eclipse that. But the 850 yards and 13 TDs, I think you might see a slight taper there. But at the end of the day, with his ability, and you look at the rest of the tight ends on the board, he's certainly, you know, a guy who I have cemented in there as the number four tight end as well. You certainly can't go wrong by having Vernon Davis on your squad. He's certainly a guy that you would start weekly with confidence and you know, feel really good about what he can put out on the field on a week-in and week-out basis.
Well, let me ask you, since you gave me that assessment, can you answer these two questions for me? The number one question is, if you don't see him getting over 800 yards, I think he still can get 800 yards. I don't think the touchdowns, he's going to match the touchdowns, but I think the yards he may match. Where would you draft Vernon Davis? And what round would you be comfortable in drafting Vernon Davis?
Yeah, certainly. I think that if we're looking at it from the standpoint of what he did last year and what he's been able to do the last couple years, if you really want him, I think round the latter half of round four is a good place place to get him. For me this year, as far as the tight ends that are available in my drafting style, he's a guy I would be looking to land in round five, because you know you certainly have to realize that Graham Gronkowski and Julius Thomas are probably going to be guys realistically gone within the first two, definitely three rounds.
Yep.
After Vernon Davis, and then we're going to get into that next, Jerry. You know, I have one other tight end on my board that I kind of have heads and heels above the rest of the tight ends before we move into another tier. So from that standpoint, it's really about your drafting style and really about you know, what you feel about the rest of this tight end crop. But he's certainly a guy that I know is highly valued in my league. Like I said, those 13 TDs receptions, I mean, those 13 TDs, they speak volume, you know. So I certainly think that no matter how it plays out, he's certainly not a guy that will be around after round five. I think if you plan on getting Vernon Davis, and like you mentioned, Jerry, depending on where you are, in line, in the draft, in the rotation, certainly would dictate round four or five. How about yourself? If you were to grab him, what round are you thinking this year?
I have to agree with you. You would have to think, because of the name recognition of those three top tight ends we talked about, those guys are going to go at latest. They're probably going to go in the third round. I'd be surprised if any one of those three top ones are past the third round. So you're looking at Vernon Davis and some of the other tight ends that we're going to talk about. So I would be comfortable drafting Vernon Davis fourth round, fifth round, somewhere around there. I don't think he's going to be on the board after the fifth round. So if you target Vernon Davis as the must-have tight end because the other three you're not going to get a chance to because of your drafting style, then I would definitely grab Vernon Davis probably definitely in the fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, he's not going to be there. I really believe he won't be there because of the talent level of the other tight ends. Not to say that they don't have the talent, but we're talking about these top four as being the best of the rest, so to speak. All right,
sure,
let's move on. And I got three tight ends here, and as we speak here, I'm still jumbling these tight ends. But you know what? I thought about the situations that these tight ends are in, and I'm going to go a little off the grid here and think that this guy, because of the circumstances and the lack of skilled players around him, is going to be in an essential role or have an essential role in the offense because of lack of talent on the outside. So I'm going to go this way, and this is probably, I would say, off the grid, but these next three guys are probably interchangeable. But I'm going to go down to Carolina. I'm going to go down to one of Cam Newton's favorite targets last year. And he was last year he was his favorite target, and he had a strong wide receiver on the outside. Now that strong wide receiver is in Baltimore, and they have a motley crew. And excuse me for saying that, but that's my opinion. They have a motley crew of wide receivers in Carolina. So I'm going to take Greg Olsen as my number five tight end because the fact is it's going to probably be the number one option in the passing game because of the lack of talent in the wide receiver position. He finished as a top eight fantasy tight end in back-to-back seasons. Olsen was one of six tight ends to see at least 100 targets. He set a career high in catches last season and topped 800 yards for the second consecutive year. I like Greg Olsen a lot this year for the simple fact that he's going to get a volume and get a huge amount of targets because there's a lack of skilled players on the wide receiver position in Carolina. Your thoughts?
Yep, excellent. So far, we pretty much on the same page. So I think that goes to speak of the expertise and consistency there. I actually have Olsen at number six. So we're we're on number five right now. So no, you're absolutely right. He has certainly become a top target for Cam Newton. The things you mentioned are right on point. Newton has all new wide receivers this year, and so certainly Olsen is going to be the guy who he's most comfortable with. He's going to be there the longest. Literally, this receiving core has been made over. So when I tell you that the top four receivers on this Panthers roster, none of them have played a single regular season down. And so Olsen, another guy, here we go. Jerry, 6'5", 253 pounds, another great red zone target. And the numbers are there. I like it a lot. Last 2 years, 104, 109 targets respectively. Both years over 800 yards. Here again is where we talk about Thomas, Gronkowski, Graham, Vernon Davis, the difference being, look, Olsen put up more yards than Julius Thomas. He only was a couple yards behind Vernon Davis, but only six TD catches. And so if there's any red flag or concern that you have with Olsen, it certainly just will be about the TD catches. And so I think that certainly is something to monitor. We know that, like I said, the numbers that Gronk and those guys are putting up, Graham, are unbelievable. They're putting up better numbers than wide receivers. So I think when we rate the tight end position, we certainly don't look at Olsen with a bad eye because you're not going to have too many tight ends who are going to give you 800 yards and six TDs. But, no, I'm with you 100%. He certainly should be the target that Cam Newton is most familiar with, most comfortable with. They've shown, obviously, some great rapport out there. And so I have no problem at all with Olsen being at number five. I think he's a solid pickup. Let me hear from you, Jerry. You know, you have him at five. I have him at six. Where do you see him going, or where would you take him in the bigger scheme of things here?
Well, we talked about 4 or 5 for Vernon Davis. I would take probably 6 to 7, somewhere around there. If you really want to get one of these top tight ends that are definitely going to see some targets and targets equal opportunities for me, then you got to be a little aggressive and grab one of these guys relatively early. I think he's a mid round pick, and I would feel comfortable in drafting him 6-7 in the 6th and 7th round, somewhere around there. You may get lucky, and he's maybe sitting on the board a little later, and that's just to be a gift if he's in the 8th or 9th round, because then you can load up on some other position.
Yep. Nope. I'm with you 100% there. I think the 6. I think after Vernon Davis is drafted, like you said, in that 4th or 5th round, I certainly think that you the way that your draft is set up, you'll see that slight hold off there for maybe a round or two. And then you'll certainly see guys in round 6 and 7 go ahead and start attacking that tight end position. And so, like you said, same thing. It's going to continue to apply. I don't want to keep saying the same thing over and over. But certainly, you know, draft how the draft board is moving, what your lineup looks like at that point, and how you have them rated, along with the other options available, as far as how you're building your roster, are certainly going to factor in. But I think those next tier of tight ends, Olsen, certainly being at the top of that list, are going to be going somewhere in round 6 and 7.
All right, we're going to move to another guy that had a huge season, not a huge season, but had a breakout season last year. And it was really conducive on what quarterback was playing, because it made a difference on what quarterback was playing. And unfortunately, for the quarterback and for the tight end, the quarterback got hurt, and he had a heck of a 3 games playing, especially with the tight end, because he had a rapport with this tight end. And like I said, I had mixed feelings on how I was going to rate these tight ends, the next 3 tight ends that we were talking about, Greg Olsen being one of them. I put up at number 5. I was going to put the guy from the big star next, but I'm not going to do that. I think he's on the downside, not to say he's going to fall off that much. I'm going to put this young buck above him, rate him number 6. I'm talking about Jordan Cameron from the Cleveland Browns. I think, and it really depends, and it may not really depend, because I think either quarterback, either Johnny Manziel, and especially Brian Hoyer, if he gets the starting job in Cleveland, this guy is going to excel, because the fact is he's such an athletic guy, and he has a ton of upside, and you saw it last year. I like Jordan Cameron in the number 6 position. Talk to me.
Yep, yes, sir, Jerry. So we're continuing to be right dead on. I have Cameron actually a 7 on my board, right behind Olsen. You hit the nail on that. You hit it dead on, Jerry. Last year, 80 catches, 917 yards. So now we're talking about he had more yards than Vernon Davis, had more yards than Olsen, had more yards than Julius Thomas. You certainly love the 117 targets. I mean, 80 catches. Look, Cameron, 6'5". The thing you see with him, you mentioned that athleticism, Jerry. He weighs the least out of all those guys. Guys up around 265, 255. He's coming in 249. So very agile, able to get in and out of his breaks very quickly. Show great hands. I certainly like what he brings to the table. Now, look, he's a guy who I drafted last year. I've seen him in the preseason connecting with Brandon Wheaton, so I went ahead and slated him in late. He was certainly a guy who was under the radar last year, which will not be the case this year. Coming in the last year, he only had 20 catches the year before. But I peeped him out in the preseason, was able to go ahead and put a nice roster together, grabbed him late, nobody even knew who he was. And so I could tell you straight out from experience, the upside is what you mentioned. The Browns, this is another team that if Josh Gordon, his suspension holds up for a year, at the wide receiver position, you got all brand new players.
Right.
So you're going to be looking at a receiving core as well as an offense overall where Cameron is the only returning starter and the only returning player to play last season. The Browns now have Miles Austin from Dallas, Nate Burleson from Detroit, and Lavelle Hawkins from Cincinnati as their top three receivers. You know, reports we've been hearing from camp, the other wide receivers on Cleveland's roster are all undrafted or drafted after the third round. So, I mean, you got guys competing out there who are unproven. And so, especially, as you mentioned, Brian Hoyer is the quarterback. You certainly like what Cameron can bring to the table. What I've seen from Cameron last year, I would be confident. My only issue that I had with him last year, Jerry, and this would be something that I give good fantasy advice on as well, when you rate these players and when you look at drafting these players, you certainly sometimes don't want to get caught up in their overall stats because from a football standpoint, Cameron had an excellent year. Like I said, you're not going to do any better than 80 catches, 917 yards, and 7 TDs. But out of those 7 TDs, 5 of them were in the first 3 games. And he had a huge game at Minnesota with Brian Hoyer at quarterback where he caught 3 TD passes. But last year, after week 4, like I said, he caught 5 TD passes in his first 4 games. After week 4 last year, he only hit pay dirt twice.
Right,
and you've seen a dramatic dip in his numbers. You know, after week 5, he only had 3 games of over 60 yards. His biggest game was at New England, where he pulled in 121 yards and 1 TD in week 15. But I think now that he has emerged and his name is on the map, defenses started to pay him a heck of a lot more attention last year. Teams certainly started to clamp down on coverage, but also he got caught up in the quarterback carousel.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah, because Wheaton was in there, and then Hoyer came in, and it seemed like Hoyer was the guy who was clicking with, because in those 2 games that Hoyer was in there, like I said, at Minnesota, 3 TD catches, and then the following week, Cincinnati, this guy is going 10 catches, 91 yards of TD, and then that following Thursday night against the Bills, when Hoyer goes down, like I said, you just seen a dramatic dip in his production. So if Hoyer can stay healthy, that increases his chances. Hoyer, it's a new year, and like I said, you got new product on the field. So, you know, we certainly can't – I don't think Hoyer has enough of a body of work for me to just say it's automatic. But he definitely showed great accuracy last year. And so if that's the case, I expect for Cameron to continue to excel. But my other question, Jerry, and I want to get some feedback on you. And you know what? And that's something else you have to taper with fantasy football. Look, you certainly want guys who are going to get the targets. And you like a situation like this where, you know, he's the only returning player. If we look at the numbers and we go by experience, he certainly should have a productive year. But sometimes guys get caught up in a situation when they are the only target. The defense clamps down on them, and they're unable to perform. So my question to you is, without Josh Gordon there blowing the top off of coverage and demanding double coverage, with all these new receivers in there, who, again, Miles Austin, Nate Burleson, Lavelle Hawkins, no disrespect to any of them, but especially Austin and Burleson up in age, you know, speed not a factor anymore. I'm not sold on the Browns running game at all. I think Ben Tate's a pretty decent back, but coming to a new team, running back is always a position that's hard to excel at. And the Browns offensive line, even though they still have Joe Thomas and Alex Mack, is not as effective as it was a few years ago. So my question to you is, do you think Josh Gordon not being there, do you think all of these new wide receivers who obviously don't have Gordon's speed and playmaking ability, and with the whole new offense and Cameron being the main target, do you think that will affect his production any?
I believe it's going to affect his production. But in my opinion, it's key. It's key to me that if Brian Hoyer is there, because I think they have certain quarterbacks have a connection with either wide receivers or tight end, just like the next tight end we're going to talk about has a connection with his quarterback. He has a connection with Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer, yep. And if you just think about it, Brian Hoyer was in the New England Patriot organization for a while. And the New England Patriot organization for the last few years has relied heavily on getting the tight end open and having athletic tight ends make plays for him. So he can get the ball to his tight end, and I feel that this guy's got a ton of upside. Regardless of the level of wide receivers on the outside, I think they're going to scheme to get those wide receivers so Jordan Cameron can operate in the middle of the field for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
and make plays. Now, his yardage production may drop, but I mm-hmm. still think once they get into the red zone, because of his size and his athleticism, I think he's going to be a prime target in the red zone. So I like Jordan Cameron over the next tight end, because I think the next one we're talking about is on the downside. So, and I would probably – you probably would be able to get him just behind Greg Olsen. And in fact, they probably would go either Jordan Cameron would go before Greg Olsen or vice versa. Let me put it that way.
I apologize. I just wanted to chime in real quick before we got to the next player. So I did want to mention too, real quick, just with Olsen. Obviously, if he can up that 7 touchdowns, he's certainly a player with the yards that he gets. You'll find him nibbling right there at that top 5, probably right behind Vernon Davis. And mm-hmm. I also wanted to mention for same thing for Cameron. It's really about those touchdowns, the touchdown catches. These guys can get double-digit touchdown catches. I have no question about the yards. They'll certainly be up there in that top 5 tier. And I just wanted to make a point, too, why preseason is so important. Because, like I said, that is certainly where I found out about Cameron last year. I just wanted to mm-hmm. make a note that for Cameron that I've already heard in OTAs and in training camp that he looks excellent. That he's increased his speed, that he's a better route runner, and he's certainly a hard worker. So I agree with you totally there, Jared. I just wanted to put it out there. Well, we're already hearing great things about Cameron in the preseason. If he is in better shape and, has another year of experience under his belt, because he's another guy breakthrough, first year really being productive, I'm with you. He's certainly a guy that could have a monster season if things go, hopefully as anticipated.
All right. Okay, let's move on to we're going to go in overtime, because I think we're going to go just to the top 10, and then we're going to talk about guys. Once we get to the top 10, we're going to be talking about guys that we maybe sleepers that that are not within the top 10 but are viable guys that you can pick up. So this next guy, and we had talked about this before just briefly, that these two guys have had a rapport for quite a few years. But I think this guy, and like I said, these three guys, Jordan mm-hmm. Cameron, Greg Olsen, and the next guy I'm going to talk about, out of the three guys, this guy, I think he's on the downside, but mm-hmm. he's still going to get his fill because of the rapport he has with his quarterback. He caught 73 catches for 851 yards, which was a 7-year low, but his total of 8 was the second highest of his career. He was a top 6 fantasy tight end at season's end. He played all 16 games, which was a surprise because he usually gets nicked up. But he has played 16 games for the 11th consecutive season, and he hasn't missed a start since 2006. Even though he gets nicked up, he's still able to be productive on the field. I'm talking about in America's team, 265 pounds, big boy, Jason Witten. I got mm-hmm. him listed as my number 7 tight end, and he could all easily move up because the piss-poor play of the Cowboys' defense is going to cause Tony Romo to throw, and that means mm-hmm. targets equals opportunities. So Jason Witten, out of any of these three that we just listed, Jason Witten, Jordan Cameron, and Greg Olsen, can be interchangeable, in my opinion, because these guys, depending on their quarterback play, is going to be key on where they wind up in the final list at the end of the season. Talk to me.
Yep, dead on with it, Jerry. Witten is actually the guy that I had at number 5. And so, you know, we're both solid, our top seven, the same guys, you know, a couple little switches here and there. And obviously, you know, those are, numbers are interchangeable. But I'm going to tell you one thing about Jason Witten. This is a guy who every single year puts up the numbers. Like you said, the one thing that he has suffered in has been TD catches. You know, over his dominating stretch, and I think he's a guy. I mean, here we go again, 6'6", 261. Speed has never been his calling card, and so I certainly think that's how he gets overlooked, along with the lack of touchdown catches. But what you, if you look at what Jason Witten has done since 2007, 96 catches, 81 catches, 94 catches, 94 catches, 79, 110 last year, 73. Look at the targets this man is getting, 142, 121, 125, 128, 117, 150, 111 over the past 7 years. He's had over 1,000 yards in four out of those 7 years, over 900 yards in the other two. Last year you mentioned 851. The only knock, like we mentioned, is touchdowns. He had eight last year, so you certainly would take that over the three, over the five that he had the past couple years. He also is a possession tight end, so you don't see his average as high as up towards 15 yards like some of these other players that we talked about. But, again, I mentioned with Jason Witten, I'm like you. I know he's getting older, but 32, listen, this guy's a tank. You mm-hmm. mentioned that he gets nicked up, but he certainly doesn't get injured. He is the a guy who you definitely just see players bouncing off of. I mean, guy catches the football, and he just runs straight up field, and guys just end up, you know, bringing him down. But he's a tank, and I think a model of consistency that you cannot overlook from a target standpoint. Look, the numbers are proven. And so with him, it's just a matter of how many touchdowns is he going to get. But you always see him at least once or twice a year, and it usually ends up being against one of these sorry defenses in the NFC East, where this guy is getting 13 catches in the game, 15 catches in the game, 18 catches in the game, you know, something ridiculous like that. And so you're able to land him excellent value. You know, you usually get Jason Witten like you're talking, round seven, round mm-hmm. eight, I think very underrated, as you mentioned as well. Now with Miles Austin gone, he was already obviously one of Romo's top targets, but now outside of Dez Bryant, he certainly will continue to be a top target. He's a security blanket, and I think it's just a matter of how many touchdown catches he's going to get that will kind of, you know, determine where he ranks amongst Olsen, where he ranks among Jordan Cameron, and possibly even Vernon Davis. But, no, he's a surefire guy. Like you said, you know he's in there week in and week out. You know that he's going to get the ball thrown his way, and it's just about how many touchdowns he's going to score. So I'm very high on Jason Witten. I love the production he brings in. He's certainly a guy that, without question, Tony Romo is going to look for. So I really like Jason Witten a lot. I had him ranked number five based on, like you said, his rapport with his quarterback. And then, look, if you look at the other weapons that he has on this team as well, I know that Olsen in Carolina, that offense right now doesn't look like they're going to put up a lot of numbers. And when you look at Cleveland, same thing, the offense overall may struggle. So, you know, a lot of times players may get caught up in the wash of what their offense is doing as a whole. In Dallas, you already know that this team is going to be in a lot of shootouts. They're going to have to score points. They're going to be on the field a lot because of their poorest defense. Mm-hmm. And they play in the NFC East. And so I think that he has a lot of positives working for him. And that's essentially why I had him rated a little bit higher than Olsen and Jordan Cameron.
Okay. Let's move on to the next one that I have in line. He reached from the city down a little bit south of me from mm-hmm. Baltimore. Dennis yeah. Pitta. He was nicked up last season, came mm-hmm. back in the final four games, and had six catches for 48 yards, a touchdown, two catches for 24 yards, four catches for 34 yards, and eight catches for 63 yards in his final four games. He's 100% mm-hmm. healthy. He just signed a five-year, $32 million contract, got mm-hmm. a new offensive coordinator who is very extremely tight end friendly. Mm-hmm. They also signed Owen Daniels as 1 and 1A for the tight end position, but tight ends are set up to catch a ton of footballs in Kubiak's system, and Pitt is going to fill the move role in that position, and he gets a huge boost, in my opinion, especially in PPR. Dennis Pitta is my eighth-rated tight end. How say you?
Yep, on my end, I have him rated down. I have him rated down a little bit further on the list. So I'll go ahead and chime in on Pitta though. Certainly, when healthy, he's certainly one of Joe Flacco's favorite targets, especially in the red zone. He's another player, excellent size, has great speed and agility. So he's certainly able to create some separation from these linebackers and safeties. And, you know, it's good to see him back at 100%. He was certainly one of the issues why the Ravens often struggled some last year, a lot of inexperience at wide receiver besides Torrey Smith. So Pitt is certainly a guy, like you said, you know, when a guy is injured like him, like Gronkowski, and as soon as they come back in the lineup, I mean, their quarterbacks are wasting no time targeting these guys heavily, then that speaks volumes. So I certainly like what Dennis Pitta brings to the table, but I do have him rated. I kind of came up with myself, Jerry. I know that in most leagues, like my league I play in is 10, 12 is a number, and then you mentioned 14. You sometimes even see leagues with 16 guys. So I kind of came up with a top 12 on my end that I felt that, you know, was kind of average for the members, the number of possible members in most leagues as surefire starters. You want to get them one way or another. And I have Pitta actually ranked on my list as 12. So, this, you know, I know we had the top seven guys the same.
Mm-hmm.
This should be interesting to see how we have ranked our the next 10 or quote-unquote 12 or 10 that we're talking about today. But certainly Pitta's a guy that you're high on. My question to you, Jerry, is with Gary Kubiak coming over from Houston, that's exactly where Owen Daniels was from Houston. They're coming over together.
Sure.
And I know that Baltimore likes to use a lot of two tight end sets. Obviously, this is going to be a system that Owen Daniels is more familiar with than Pitta. Are you concerned any, having Pitta ranked so high, are you concerned any that Owen Daniels may possibly take away from some of his production, especially possibly in the red zone?
No. But the simple fact is, the rapport that Pitta and Flacco have in the past, Flacco doesn't forget that, and that's Flacco's security blanket. Anytime Flacco didn't have a place to go, he always looked for his BFF, just like Romo did with Jason Witten. It's the same type of scenario that I see in Baltimore, that Flacco and Pitta have a very good rapport, and especially in the red zone. You know, for Dennis, a big, nice, big, tall target in Dennis Pitta with a lot of sure hands and is able to get home and, I mean, get open in the red zone. So I have no reservations. I understand. I'm a Houston Texans fan, so I know Kubiak and Owens very well. And I have more confidence in Pitta than I do have in Owen Daniels. That's one of the reasons why Owen Daniels is no longer with the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. Kubiak knows Daniels, but I think Pitta is the better talent. Obviously, when he signed a contract that he signed, they're going to get him the ball early and often. Let me put it that way. And he happens to be the even though Steve Smith's there, I still think he's a second option behind Torrey Smith. So I still think that's going to take place. All right.
True, and just one quick chime in, real quick, Jerry, before we continue. I just wanted to, because this will be the first area this can be something me and you track throughout the season. I think that Owen Daniels' presence will affect Pitta some. Not a lot, because like you, I certainly think Pitta is the better tight end. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that, especially where Daniels is in his point in his career. But if we're talking about Daniels even getting 35 catches and maybe four TDs in the red zone, those are potential balls that could go to Pitta. And then bringing over Steve Smith this year and second year Marlon Brown making some progress. I think Flacco has a lot more options at his disposal. So I did just want to chime in. I think that'll be great for me and you to track to see, you know, exactly how well Pitta does.
Yeah, well, I circled it over here anyway, so trust me.
Okay, cool.
we'll track it. right, let's move on to the next guy. And I could have easily moved this next guy up because he's in a very tight end friendly offense. I'm not too high on the offensive coordinator if he was a head coach, but as an offensive coordinator, North Turner is a offensive coordinator genius. Anytime he goes to an offense as an offensive coordinator, not a head coach, the tight end, the running back have excelled in their respective offenses that North Turner runs. And because of that, Kyle Rudolph, even though he had a career best before he broke his foot last year in the eighth game, he had 60 catches for 632 yards and 6 touchdowns. And that's without North Turner. He's healthy now. He's in North Turner tight end friendly offense. And I expect Kyle Rudolph to have a monster year in North Turner's offense, especially with the possibility of even Matt Castle, but if it's Teddy Bridgewater, the most friendly receiver on a offense for a rookie or a young quarterback is the tight end. And put that on top of North Turner coaching a rookie quarterback, that tight end is going to be an essential position for that offense. So I like Kyle Rudolph in the number 9 position, and he could easily be in the number 8 position in my rankings. Talk to me.
Yes, sir. I'm high on Rudolph myself. Look, another guy certainly can catch in later rounds. Excellent value. You know, it seems like, you know, we're going to be hitting a repetitive theme here with the size of these tight ends and some things they bring to the table. But look, if nothing else, Rudolph is a huge target in that red zone at 6'6", 259. And we all know that Christian Ponder, let's face it, you know, and no disrespect, but he's not a good quarterback. And he certainly was able to hook up with Rudolph when he was healthy for a complete season a year before for 9 TD passes. Now look, the 493 yards that he did have in that season for the 9 TDs, you certainly don't like that yardage, okay? But the 9 TDs, you'll take that any day. Like you said, he missed time last year. I don't have his talent is there. I actually have Rudolph ranked number 10 on my list, so we know that the talent is there. I just wonder, and look, you hit it on the head. Good point. North Turner's there, very tight end friendly offense. We're just wondering, we don't know who the quarterback is going to be right now. And see, with that being the case, we don't know, and this is where why watching in preseason is going to be so very vital. We certainly got to see what quarterback is out there because it's going to come down to Castle or Teddy Bridgewater for sure. I don't think Ponder stands a chance. They may have different preferences as who their favorite target is because you still have Patterson and you still have Greg Jennings. But if used properly, he's certainly a guy with huge upsides. I love his athleticism. He's another guy who can get downfield and make plays. So I certainly have him ranked inside of my top 10. You just wonder about his yards because his career high in yards, and he's a young player. It's only 4 years, but he hasn't. And last year, he only played 8 games. He would have been on pace to eclipse that. But basically, 500 yards have been the amount of yards that he's reached as a career high so far. So you certainly want to watch that. If he's not able to get in the end zone, then that top 10 rating certainly won't be worth it.
And to tell you the truth, and this is the only downside of Mr. Rudolph, he's not too fleet of foot. He's probably, out of all these tight ends, him and Jason Witten, I think Mr. Rudolph is a little slower than Jason Witten, so he's probably the slowest of the tight ends we've already listed. Slow. But because he makes up for it, because he gets open, he's a big body and he's got sure hands, even though he's not that fleet of foot. All right, let's move on to the next one. And this guy, I put him in at number 10, but injury concerns, especially concussion concerns, bother me. Especially the fact that he masked last year a time when he did have a concussion and didn't let anybody know. in his rookie year, and a concussion ended his rookie year. But he's very athletic. He's in a offense that is got a lot of mouths to feed, but the offensive coordinator slash head coach likes to get the pill to the tight end, and so I'm going to put him at the number 10 position, and that person happens to be from the nation's capital, the Washington Redskins, Jordan Reed. That's who I like.
Okay, you got Reed coming in. Let's see here. I have Reed, actually, and where I'm pointing to see here, that was 5, 6, 7, 8. I've actually got Reed coming in at 9. So we're basically, you know, real close there. Like you, that was my only concern, injury. Other than that, he's good to go. With Garcon and DeSean Jackson on the outside, healthy RG3, who excels running bootlegs, running waggles, rolling out. You got an effective runner in Alfred Morris in the backfield, and then I think a guy who's underrated in that Washington offense as well this year, which is really going to open things up. They brought over Andre Roberts from Arizona, and he'll be playing in the slot. And so when you look at the potential matchups that Reed has on his hands, he'll certainly be open. Should be a great red zone target. Can certainly stretch the field. And I know everybody is looking forward to seeing a healthy Robert Griffin III as far as scrambling and feet. But in his rookie year, he was so awesome because he had precision accuracy. I was blown away by his accuracy, especially rolling out and scrambling. And so barring no injuries, Reed, without question, is a top 10 tight end. Certainly a guy that I think if it wasn't for, you know, maybe some injury concern, he's certainly right up there. I mean, I think these guys we're talking about in this second tier here, touchdown here, a couple yards there, are interchangeable. So I'm with you 100%. I really like Jordan Reed. I actually had him ranked number 10 on my board.
All right. Now, this is pretty tough because I think we're going to probably definitely disagree on the next few tight ends, but I have to get this guy because I think he had a heck of a season last year. Even if it wasn't a Mike Sherman offense, he's got a new offensive coordinator in Bill Lazor who's coming from the Chip Kelly offense. And I think they're going to move him around quite a bit. He's pretty versatile in what the way he can move around in the formation. Very athletic tight end. I like Charles Clay as my number 11 tight end listed here. You may have someone else in his slot, but I like the things that the Miami Dolphins are trying to do, especially with the up-tempo. He was ranked 7th among fantasy tight ends last year. He saw the most targets, 98 among tight ends last year. And I know they're going to make use of that athleticism this year, especially with Bill Lazor. So Charles Clay, number 11 on my list. Talk to me, man.
Yep, with you there. So we pretty much have had the same players, just, you know, ranked differently. And you see that, you know, certainly it doesn't matter, you know, what show you're watching or what may have you. And that's the beauty of it. You know, you certainly want different opinions. But, no, I'm with you 100% on Clay. Big-time talent. I certainly like his ability to shake tackles in the open field. Certainly like his route running. Very quick. And, you know, certainly a big-time problem for linebackers. And like you said, with the new offense of coordinator in there, tight ends usually get the benefit of the doubt as far as kind of being a safety valve and a security blanket for the quarterback until they get a little bit more acclimated with the offense overall. Certainly if Mike Wallace can Tannehill can hook up on the deep ball. They missed on a lot of opportunities last year. You have Brian Hartline, a solid number 2 wide receiver. So as Tannehill continues to progress and grow, and I think Clay was a big part of that last year, I certainly like Clay. I actually had him ranked number 7, excuse me, 8 on my list. I had him right behind Olsen and Jordan Cameron. after those top five. I had Graham Gronkowski, Julius Thomas, Vernon Davis, Jason Witten at 6, Olsen at 7, Cameron at 8, and Charles Clay at 9. Excuse me. So I have him a little bit more higher up the board. I just think that when you look at Miami's offense and what he was able to do last year, he was a surprise. This year, they know what they have in him. So I fully expect for them to find some creative ways to use him, and I certainly think he's a guy who could help improve Ryan Tannehill's efficiency in the red zone as well. So I really like Charles Clay, like you. From what I'm hearing, Jerry, so far is after those top-tier tight ends go, we have some excellent later-round draft picks that if you put a nice roster ahead of yourself, certainly these guys like Witten and Jordan Cameron and Jordan Reed and Charles Clay are players who could certainly be viable starting options that you would start with confidence. They certainly might not put up the big numbers that we mentioned with those first couple guys who have the most elite quarterbacks in the NFL, but certainly Charles Clay is a guy who I would feel very good about starting on a week-in and week-out basis.
And plus, you have to think about this. See, say you miss out on it accidentally on purpose or whatever with these top tight ends. So you don't draft them, but you're drafting good players in the wide receiver or running back and maybe even the quarterback position. So you're strengthening your team with those skill positions. So even though you pick up and I'm not disparaging him, but even though you pick up a Charles Clay or Kyle Rudolph or Jordan Reed further down in the draft, because you've shored up your other positions, it's not going to hurt you that much that you don't have one of the elite tight ends because you offset it with the type of players you've already drafted versus if someone drafted a Jimmy Graham, now they use that draft. Now they draft a position. Now they have to grab a wide receiver or a running back in the later rounds because they picked up a tight end in the earlier rounds. So it all depends on your draft philosophy and where you fall in the draft, whether you want to be able to have one of these elite guys early because if you pick up one of the elite guys, regardless of what position it is, we're talking about tight ends now, regardless if it's a running back, or wide receiver, quarterback, or the like, you're going to have to make up for the position that you're not strong at further down the line. So depending on where you pick it up, hopefully you make a good decision like a Charles Clay or Jordan Reed that you're able to get a decent return on your draft position that you picked them up at. I mean,
I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Like I said, it all depends on your draft philosophy. If you want one of the elite guys, especially in a tight end position, then you're going to have to give up something in the later rounds, and possibly in a skill position like a wide receiver or running back because you picked up an elite tight end. So it all depends on how you feel about how you want your draft to wind up.
Yep, I'm with you 100. Now, I was just going to chime in real quick with you. Definitely part of drafting strategy. Look, if you're going Gronkowski, if you're going Graham, if you're going Julius Thomas, and especially how early you're picking them, these are players that you are depending on and relying on expect to be a part of carrying your team for the entire year. So if that's the case, that's where you want to draft them. But if we're going with some of these guys we're talking about now, who will certainly be very good and productive, these are more of complementary players that you're not depending on every single week, but you're certainly depending on them early enough. But like you said, at that point, you stockpile enough firepower at the top of your lineup where when you draft a guy like this later in the round, like you said, you're not expecting him to lead your team. And so, you know, it's about the value of the pick. And I'm like you. I'm going to watch the board. And, if these guys go early, as much as you like them, I certainly would feel good about some of the other guys that I have in front and would have no problem at all grabbing a Reed or a Clay some of these guys in later rounds. So, you know, as we keep reiterating here, Jerry, how the board moves and your draft style and your strategy certainly factors in.
All right. And since we're going only to 12, and then we're going to talk about some sleepers here, this guy, okay, he was held under, and I think he's going to have a better year this year because it was his first season with the team. He was held under 70 yards in 12 of the 16 games he played with the Chicago Bears. He was the number 10 tight end in fantasy, and he should have a better rapport with Jay Cutler, a healthy Jay Cutler, with all the weapons that they have on the outside. He should be able to get a lot more opportunities with Jay Cutler in this Mark Trestman offense.
Yep.
In his second year with the team. I'm talking about the crazy guy, the guy that is a very happy-go-lucky and a unique character in Chicago. I'm talking about Martellus Bennett. I have him listed as number 12 on my list. It's on you. Hello? Hello?
Yep, I'm with you, Jerry, on that. So, you know, our top 12 guys, all the same guys. So I think that, you know, we definitely get some credit there and, you know, shows that we certainly are thinking along the same lines here. I had Bennett actually rated in as number 11. And
okay.
So, you know, the benefits, you spoke on it. Now, look, last year, Bennett certainly got lost in the shuffle when Josh McCown came in. You know, him and Cutler and Bennett were certainly had that chemistry and that rapport there. And look, with McCown, it certainly wasn't a knock on him because when you have Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey and Matt Forte, then you're certainly going to utilize those weapons to the best of your ability. But you did see Cutler be a little bit more tight end friendly. So I certainly think that if Cutler is there for the entire year, Bennett's number certainly can go up. Look, you again, 759 receiving yards. You love that. You love the 96 targets. It's the five TDs that I think, you know, it definitely hurts the numbers because at that point, I mean, you're scoring, it's 11 games if we're averaging it out that you're not in the end zone. And, again, doesn't average a whole lot of yards. But, look, coming into the season, Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall are kind of the consensus or at least tied for the top wide receiving duo in the league. And I think with the ability what those guys have to do on the outside, you factor in Matt Forte, how effective play action can be. If Bennett can get those touchdown numbers up, and I think that with these second-tier players that we've talked about, Jerry, that really has been the difference with Olsen, with Witten, with Cameron, with Reed, with Rudolph. It hasn't been so much about how many targets, the receptions, the yards. It's been about getting in that end zone. So
right.
You certainly hope that he can improve on those five TD catches. And, again, with the second tier that we just went through after that top five, I think that's where you're going to see the difference is the amount of touchdown catches.
Okay. All right, we've gone to an average league, which is about 12 teams. I want to go in this route and give me some sleeper tight ends that you see that a lot of people don't see on the radar before whatever reason or circumstances or they're not on the radar and that they can pick up these guys quite naturally. They can pick up in way later rounds because of the fact they're not as prominent and well known as the top 12 we talked about. You give me whatever amount that you want to give me, and then I'll give you mine.
Okay, sure, Jerry. This should be fun here, I'll certainly keep it moving along. I have a dilemma, so you can certainly Jerry, give me
sure.
your advice on this one because I'm split down the middle. This is the dilemma that I'm having on my hands here. I got two different situations going on. The next set of most talented tight ends, they're all in timeshares. When I look out in San Diego, you got veteran Antonio Gates, and then you got the youngster Ladarius Green. When I look out in Cincinnati, you got Jermaine Gresham, and then you got the up-and-coming youngster Tyler Eifert, who had an effective rookie year. I look out in Indianapolis, you got Kobe Fleener. He's going to be splitting time with Dwayne Allen, who missed time all the last year, but is a better pass catcher and actually was slated to start last year before his injury. I look out in Detroit. Look, you still got Pettigrew. You have Fourier come on last year and be a huge red zone threat. And then this year they go out and draft Eric Ebron. And then I look over in Philadelphia. You got Brent Celek, who's solid, and certainly with much better production with Nick Foles at quarterback. But they went out last year and drafted Zach Ertz, who's another guy I've been hearing in preseason has been looking excellent. And they're saying has made the most progress out of the receiving core. So, I mean, it's hard. You certainly don't want to get caught up in a guessing game, in a timeshare, especially at tight end. But in my estimation, those teams that I mentioned, you're talking about Phillip Rivers in San Diego, Dalton in Cincinnati, Luck in Indianapolis, Nick Foles in Philly, and Matthew Stafford in Detroit. All of those offenses are potent. You got top two, you got very good quarterbacks, but you got a situation on your hands where you don't know who's going to be getting the ball and when. And so, what's your take on that? Because in my opinion, those are the next set of most talented receivers. But I'll get to that after I get some feedback from you. I having a little trouble rating these guys, at least until we can see what's going on in the preseason, because there's some other guys who are the main starters. They don't have a timeshare, so I'm leaning towards rating them possibly a little bit higher, because at least I know that when it comes to throwing to the tight end, they're certainly going to be getting the ball all the time.
Well, you gave me a great set of timeshares. Antonio Gates and Ladarius Green, Fleener and Allen, Eifert and Jermaine Gresham and Zach Ertz and Brent Celek and Eric Ebron Brandon Pettigrew.
And Fourier. They got three out there. I don't know what they're going to do.
I know Eric Ebron is a very athletic tight end. I know they want to get him involved in the offense, but he's a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
And you got two other options in there with Gresham and the red zone exclusive target in Fourier. So I have to, in my opinion, cross Eric Ebron off the list because of the two other options, and I can't see him doing that much, especially when they have Golden Tate and Megatron, and I can't think of the slot receiver they had, but so they got a lot of mouths to feed, Jim Caldwell type of offense that I don't think the tight end's going to be targeted on a consistent basis. So I have to cross Eric Ebron off the list, even though I do that hesitantly because I haven't seen a preseason game yet. But I think because of the options they have in that offense, I have to cross Eric Ebron off. Let's go to Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. Dwayne Allen is the more athletic and more versatile tight end in that he can block. Kobe Fleener is not a blocker. Dwayne Allen is a blocker, plus the fact he can catch the ball. But the dilemma is this: Andrew Luck and Kobe Fleener have had a rapport for a number of years, dating back to college. So I would think if I was to go and think about either of those two, it would be on the side of Kobe Fleener, as long as he could stay healthy, because he's had he had the tendency to get nicked up because he's not as he's not as sturdy and reliable physically as Dwayne Allen is. So I would have to cross Dwayne Allen because the fact is he won't be used as often as Kobe Fleener. Plus, the fact is, I'm a little skeptical on Kobe Fleener because they in turn have a lot of mouth to feed. T.Y. Hilton, Reggie Wayne, Hakeem Nicks. He's going to be inconsistent in the amount of targets and receptions that he gets because of the fact of those three wide receivers that he had. In my opinion, I would cross off Kobe Fleener, but I would rate him, definitely rate him before I would rate Eric Ebron. So it would be he would be above Eric Ebron and Dwayne Allen. But Kobe Fleener can be in the mix, but I don't see him doing that on a consistent basis because of the other options that Andrew Luck has.
That's right.
Let's go to Antonio Gates and Ladarius Green. I love, absolutely love Ladarius Green. I think he's the next Antonio Gates down there, but he ain't Antonio Gates. And if Antonio Gates is healthy, Ladarius Green is going to be used like he was used last year, sporadically.
Okay.
He's going to be a option, but not a consistent option because the fact is Phillip Rivers has extremely good rapport with Antonio Gates, and as long as Antonio Gates is healthy and can perform on the field, he's going to be the target other than Keenan Allen that Phillip Rivers is going to go to because he's his BFF, his favorite standby. Phillip Rivers loves Antonio Gates because Antonio Gates is older than a tooth. I should say longer than a tooth, but he's still athletic enough that he can get the job done. Now, quite naturally, out of all the ones that we talked about up until this point, if Antonio Gates got hurt, this is a guy I can see emerging big time in that offense, big time. But I would go with Antonio Gates, and Ladarius Green is a tight end star in the waiting.
Okay.
Zach Ertz and Brent Celek. Brent Celek, in my opinion, is very inconsistent. Very inconsistent. And that's one of the reasons why they drafted Zach Ertz in this offense. Chip Kelly likes young, athletic, intelligent guys, not to say Brent Celek isn't intelligent. But Zach Ertz is a lot more athletic than Brent Celek. And a lot more reliable, because Brent Celek has a tendency to have the drop disease, drop passes. So if I was to go with a tight end in the Philadelphia offense, it would be Zach Ertz. It's second year off of his rookie year, one more year into that Chip Kelly offense. Got Jeremy Maclin on the outside, got Riley Cooper, got Sproles and Sproles and Shady McCoy. I like Zach Ertz to do a few things. Tyler Eifert, that's another guy. That's another guy that because of they have Jermaine Gresham in there, and the fact is Hugh Jackson said, we're going to run the football. We're going to run the football. Hugh Jackson is a run-the-football type of offense with passing when it's necessary. I don't know if Tyler Eifert is going to get enough targets to be effective and to be a viable tight end option to play with. So either Jermaine Gresham or Tyler Eifert, I wouldn't even think about it because I really – the inconsistency of the position is not something I would think about. Now, I don't know if you have any more, but there's one guy, there's a couple of guys. One's a wily veteran, and the other one is a guy that I think is going to have a surprise, maybe not a breakout year, but I think he's going to have a very good year. And it's probably can get picked up on a lot of drafts for on the cheap. First guy is a mainstay. It had been one of the most reliable tight ends in the league, barring getting injured. I know I picked up his quarterback very late in the draft, and he helped me win the championship. I'm talking about Big Ben. Heath Miller is not on a lot of draft radars, but he's an extremely consistent and reliable option for Ben Roethlisberger. When Ben's not throwing the ball down the field to Antonio Brown, and now it's going to be not Emmanuel Sanders. I'm trying to think. I can't think of the guy off the top of my head that's going to be replacing Emmanuel Sanders.
Marcus Wheaton.
There you go, Marcus Wheaton. Thank you. He's going to be throwing it to Heath Miller in the middle of the field. And I like Heath Miller a lot to be able to pick up a reliable tight end very late in the rounds, because he's going to be an afterthought with a lot of people with these other name tight ends. That you can load up on other positions and pick up a reliable tight end that you know is going to get a decent amount of targets. And he doesn't have any competition with any other tight end but himself. So, that's key. Another guy that I'm really thinking about, even though I'm not too high on a quarterback, there's two quarterbacks, and you've never heard this from me before because this is only the second time we've been on air. There's two quarterbacks in the National Football League that I absolutely can't understand how they could be quarterbacks in the league. One, he's not going to be a starting quarterback this year, which is Christian Ponder. And the other one is Jake
Locker.
Jake Locker. One of the worst quarterbacks that got drafted, and I can't understand why he's still in the contention or going to be the starting quarterback. But because of his lack of a skill, I guess, I like his tight end. I think Delanie Walker is going to have a really big year and raise the eyes of a lot of people, like, where does this guy come from? Because the fact is he's going to be in the middle of the field. He's going to be, like I said, the most BFF of a young quarterback is a tight end. He's right in the middle of the field. It's not a really a hard throw because he's in the middle of the field. He can bail you out when you have no other options on the outside. I like Delanie Walker, especially in his conservative offense that they're going to have in somewhat conservative offense, especially when they don't have a really running game. Even though they have Bishop Spanky, and when we get to running backs, we can talk about that. But I like Delanie Walker as a surprise tight end. You got anything for me,
Jerry? Yeah, man, you're dead on with that. Look, both of those guys, and you know, when we I guess combine everything together, you know, like I was saying, the two guys you spoke on. And I'll tap into a couple other guys that I had in mind and let you jump back in. That's a dilemma. I think that in those timeshares, those tight ends are either better or have better quarterbacks or they're in better offenses there, so they're set up to succeed more. But you mentioned Heath Miller, and I like Heath a lot. He actually, not last year but the year before, was great for me in fantasy football. Everything that you said about him was dead on. Look, in an ideal situation, and if things work out the way that they are supposed to work out, he's certainly a guy that you would like to have because, as you mentioned, he's been with Roethlisberger's entire career. He's the only other player besides Antonio Brown who's been there the last couple years. Another guy, 6'5", 256, great red zone presence. Obviously has had a couple injuries to slow him down a tad bit. You know, he's in his 10th year. And so my main concern with him is touchdowns. Prior to the 2012 season, you know, that's the season I had him, where he had career highs with 816 yards in the 8 TDs. The two seasons before that, only 2 TDs and 2 TDs. And last year, came back late. He wasn't 100%, but only had one touchdown. And so that is really my only concern with Heath Miller is getting in the end zone. You know, he's not a fast guy, so, he's not going to be getting you a ton of big plays. But like you said, in the real world, and we know that things don't always work out that way in fantasy football, he certainly has a good quarterback. He should be set up to receive a ton of targets. But I just haven't seen enough as far as scoring touchdowns is concerned. And he's never really been a big yardage guy. So I think that with him, it's going to have to be either or. He's either going to have to get a lot of yards, which I don't see. We know that Pittsburgh certainly is going to be getting back to that ground game this year with Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount. So you with him, if you don't get a good amount of touchdowns, which, like I said, hey, look, I'll live with the 40 yards week in and week out, but if you can go ahead and get in that end zone enough, you know, you're pushing me up to double digits. So that's my only concern with Heath Miller is just getting in the end zone. The other guy that you mentioned, great point on Jake Locker. Him and Ponder, you know, the Titans and Vikings wasted high draft picks on these guys. And so I think it's a situation that Locker is still there. He's going into a contract year. There's certainly, you know how it is, Jerry. You make an investment. You certainly are hoping and praying and wanting it to succeed so it doesn't end up being a wasting pick and a waste of money. But we've seen that Jake Locker certainly has not shown the consistency from the quarterback standpoint, especially being accurate with the football downfield, and he's certainly shown to be injury prone. So I love Delanie Walker as well. But when I really seen Delanie Walker, his production increase, it was when Ryan Fitzpatrick was there. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a way better quarterback than Jake Locker. So, I mean, certainly, again, here's a case where Walker's talent is of no question to me. If he had a better quarterback, he'd certainly be in a better situation to succeed. But like you said, this year they're going to be running a very kind of low-budgeted, conservative game plan. Tennessee does have still a top five, top six offensive line. So I do, you know, you said it, will touch up on Bishop Sankey a little bit later. I certainly think that the running game has an opportunity to prosper. But I'm like you. I'm not sold on Jake Locker. And look, the receivers that they have, again, if you had an Aaron Rodgers, a Tom Brady, you know, people fail to realize it's this quarterback who makes these receivers. We've seen in Green Bay and in Denver. I mean, these guys aren't, you know, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones. These guys, pinpoint accuracy, you know, and smarts is what's turning these late round draft picks into stars and putting up these numbers. So when you have Kendall Wright, Justin Hunter, and Nate Washington as the outside weapons, and you factor in Locker's, you know, not being that good of a quarterback, and then you do have a rookie running back, and they're going to be trying to pound the ball out. I just wonder exactly how well Walker can do on a week-in and week-out basis to be a starter. So I like Walker, but, you know, for those facts, I'm not concerned. A couple other guys I'm going to throw at you, Jerry, and let you chime in that I had on that list of guys who may not be as talented as those timeshares, but certainly they're going to get.
This has got to be quick because we're up against the clock here. So if you can make it quick,
sure.
We're really up against the clock and we can get cut off here. So I just want to make that point before you can do it.
Okay. No problem. And these are the last guys who would be relevant. Mm-hmm. Jared Cook of the St. Louis Rams, Scott Chandler, Buffalo Bills. And I think the guy who underrated you want to keep your eye on is Quirless for Green Bay. Obviously, JerMichael Finley's no longer there. You have one of the best quarterbacks in the league with Aaron Rodgers who can certainly deliver the ball. What's your take on those three guys, Jared Cook, Scott Chandler, and Quirless?
Well, the one I really like is Jared Cook. I think Jared Cook, he first year with the St. Louis Rams, and he had a shaky season. I think it was because of quarterback play. I think if Sam Bradford stays healthy, Jared Cook is going to have a better year than he had last year. The other two, I don't know if Corliss is athletic enough to be a viable option, and Chandler could be a good choice because of the young quarterback and that combination of young quarterback, best friend as a tight end. With that being said, before we get cut off here, you got anything quick to say before we get out of here for next week?
Nope. It was a great show. I certainly want to make sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm at NFL Exporter. That's NFLExporter. Great show again today, Jerry. That's about it. Just thank all the fans, all the listeners, all the viewers for checking us out. Always got to shout out my man Vic Gardner. You know, the whole